Some people say they are getting fatigued with the discussion about gender equality. You can be fatigued if you worked for 20 years non-stop on changing something, but you cannot be fatigued if you just had to listen to something for a couple of years.
Welcome to the Women on the Move podcast from JPMorgan Chase. I'm Sam Saperstein. Women on the Move is a global initiative designed to empower female employees, clients, and consumers to build their careers, grow their businesses, and improve their financial health. Each episode will feature successful and inspiring women who are breaking the mold. They're sharing their career journeys and leadership lessons, talking about their professional and personal goals, and making a difference in the lives of others. This season, I'm taking you to the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, where I caught up with many of the women who inspire me every day. Today's guest travels the world, advocating on behalf of women. Katja Iverson joined Women Deliver in 2014 and is leading the organization's fight for gender equality around the world. Katja is a prolific thought leader on women's rights in the global economy, politics, and culture. She's also an advocate for democratizing the feminist movement, giving a voice to underrepresented communities. It was an honor to speak with Katja about how she advises leaders and communities to rethink gender equality. So Katja, thank you so much for being with us here on our Women on the Move podcast. It's great to see you here in Davos.
It's great to be here, and what a great studio you have.
Yes, we are here in the Equality Lounge with the Female Quotient, so among many people, men and women, which is great.
And the perfect place to be for this podcast.
Talk to us about how you got to Women Deliver and what your career journey has been like.
So yes, Women Deliver is an advocacy organization. We work to push gender equality and women's health and rights and drive investment to that. And my route there has been a little unorthodox, I think.
Tell us.
I have done many, many different things, but it all started with my grandmother. She was born in 1915, very poor, and she was one of those extraordinarily smart women who never got a chance. You know, didn't get an education, worked to take care of her family, her smaller sisters and brothers, was sent out to serve at the age of 8 so she could make money for the family. And when her brother had to go to school because he was a boy, she was sent out to take care of him. So she worked, met my granddad, and they could see that they needed to break the poverty cycle. And she knew that she could not get pregnant because then he would never get his education. So she never got an education. She became a stay-at-home mom, which, of course, I'm happy because else I wouldn't have been here.
Right.
But her biggest dream was to get that education, so that became her dream for me. So she saved my life when I was born. I was born too early. She gave me a computer the day I graduated. She didn't know what it was. And on her deathbed, she told me to go and do good for girls and women because the world needed that.
Wow. What an influence on your life, a special person.
So her, Pippi Longstocking, and Nelson Mandela are my role models.
Your heroes and role models. I can understand Nelson Mandela for sure. How does Pippi Longstocking play into this?
Oh, Pippi Longstocking, she's the strongest girl in the world, and she says two wonderful things. She says, I've never tried that. I'm sure I can. And she said, if you're strong, you have to be good. And that means when we have privilege, when we are rich, when we're strong, when we're capable, we have to be good and make sure that that also benefits others.
Using it for the right reasons to benefit everyone. So tell us about your focus areas for Women Deliver. What are the special areas that you particularly work on?
So Women Deliver works on gender equality at large, but we come from a background of health. So Women Deliver, it started as a health, but we say women deliver and we deliver everything. Not only babies. So we always look at it through that gender lens. We look at development. So what we have done is we use evidence, we use solutions to go and nudge the big and powerful to make change happen. And in a gender equality space, whether it's in the workplace or at home or at school or in the health system, there we kind of really come with what is it that we know works, what needs to be done, and the data that can sustain that. You know, 10 years ago, we had hardly any cost-benefit analysis that showed it paid to invest in girls and women. Women Deliver stepped in. We worked with McKinsey, we worked with KPMG, we worked with the World Bank to really also, apart from the moral argument of fairness and equality, also have that economic evidence that shows that if we had a gender equal workplace, things would be better. If we had that gender equal workplace across the globe, we could add up to 26% to global GDP. Really prove that that gender equal world is healthier, wealthier, more productive, and more peaceful. So now we can show it, and we can also show how to get there. And that's where we do the power scans and see who is it that has influence where, and how can we influence them, which is also one of the reasons why I'm in Davos.
So tell me about that power scan. What are you looking for, and what do you hope to find in terms of people or organizations?
The standard would say that it's the prime minister and the president and the minister of finance who have you know, kind of have power in some countries. And it's the CEOs and it's the people at the top. So we work with countries, we work with companies, we work with organizations, but we also kind of look at it and say, okay, but who influenced them? Well, you have the media. Yes, but you, for example, also in a government context have auditors or in the private sector. And they hold the powerful to account. So if we can work with auditors of getting a gender lens to auditing, which we, for example, have done, then we can push the powerful in another way.
That is great. So is that a new avenue that others hadn't really pursued before?
Yeah, and we're inviting people. The auditors love it. We love it. And people are kind of seeing, well, that's a good way of doing it. So we do that very concretely. So I'm an advisor to a good number of global companies
around the world,
and
well,
you know, to governments. I've been on the first G7 Gender Equality Council with Prime Minister Trudeau. I've been on Macron's. So I'm working with, you know, the UN leaders, and we're working. We're doing that. So we're pushing the documents, we're pushing the wording, we're pushing the money, and every time we do it from a collaborative sense. We don't shout. We don't shame. But we come and say, come on, we can do better, and here's what we can do.
And working
and then
from
we
within
work
those
together
systems.
And we understand and we do it, even though partnership can be hard. So we work with 3,000 civil society organizations, we work with the companies, we work with the government, and then we kind of convene so we can say, well, this is not just one sector that can fix this. If we talk about gender equality, if we talk about equal pay, if we talk about women in leadership, it's not just one entity that can fix that. We need to work together.
How has the economic argument helped you to advance the cause? I mean, I hate to think that that's what it took to push things forward, but the way you use it and the way you actually state those facts, you know, just how, what role did that play in sort of pushing you even further?
We know and can prove now that when we invest in girls and women, when we invest in gender equality, there's a ripple effect that benefits not only the individual, but the family, the community, the business, and the country. That's taken a while to get there. We saw back in the 2000s that when we came with moral arguments of fairness, arguments of human rights, we didn't get really far. We didn't get into the power rooms because everybody kind of have the rights to everything. And if you're, you know, the CFO or the CEO or you're the Minister of Finance, you have so many demands that you also have to look at the return of investment. Is my money used best there, or is my money used best there, or is my money used best there? So we saw that we kind of, they smiled a little and then they said, let's go on to business. So framing gender equality and women's participation and women's leadership, etc., also as part of core business was key, and having the arguments that could sustain that. So that has gotten us far. Sometimes when we think things go too slow, we have to take a step back and then just look
again
at it over perspective. And there I have my grandmother as a yardstick, but I also have, you know, the data that shows the trajectories. What I see today is that there's a pushback on the investment case.
In what way?
We still need it, but there's more among some front runners the fairness is getting back. So I've had some wonderful discussions here in Davos with senior leadership and CEOs that say, you know, I'm not hiring a woman because it's good for business. I'm hiring a woman because it's the right thing and it's the good thing for business. Seeing her as a female leader. I'm just seeing a leader.
Right.
And that's where we want to get to.
Yes.
But sometimes you need kind of the steps, whether it's transitional quotas or the investment case, to get to the new normal.
Yep.
We're not at the new normal yet. And I'm a little worried because we're seeing tremendous pushback on both women's rights to own their own bodies, but also in some countries, women's, you know, place in the workplace. Mm. And that's also an encouragement to WEF to really keep on the agenda. We're hearing some people say they are getting fatigued with the discussion about gender equality.
Right.
And I have that. You can be fatigued if you'd accept that it takes 257 years to get economic parity. If you accept that, you can be fatigued if you worked for 20 years nonstop on changing something, but you cannot be fatigued if you just had to listen to something for a couple of years.
Very fair. That's very true. We have to move beyond that. So 2020 is going to be a big year for discussion around gender equality topics. One reason is it's the 25th anniversary of the Beijing Platform for Action. And at the time that was done, that was considered to be the most advanced roadmap for advancing women. And you've called for some big, bold, accountable commitments and action on the part of organizations and governments. So how do we capitalize on this? What big, bold moment are you looking for from this year?
There's going to be moments, but there's more importantly going to be action. And it's not just a year. It's merely the beginning. If we look at where the world was 25 years ago, we've seen progress on some accounts, but we've also seen regress.
Mm.
And we're kind of at a tipping point, and it can tip one way or the other, and we want to tip it the other.
Right.
So we want to see that government goes beyond the words, that companies actually put action behind the commitments and investments. You know, we have a lot of talking lines. Now we need the budget lines.
So you have to see the dollars there.
We need to
see
both the dollars, but also the real eagerness. It's not something you just pay off. You also have to do it.
Right.
But I'm incredibly optimistic because what we are seeing forming now, it's going to be a super year. There's going to be great events in Mexico, in Paris, in New York, in hundreds of countries across the globe. It's going to be activities that really shines that light. Built on the Women Deliver conference that we had last year with 8,000 people. If we as an NGO can kind of gather 8,000,
yes.
You know, imagine what this can do.
Right.
And we've heard some of the discussions in Davos and around about it's going to be a joint collaboration between civil society, government, and business. And when we put our heads together and go beyond those talking points and really put transformative action. You know, imagine, do we need to reinvent some of the international systems to do this right? Imagine kind of this image of that 15-year-old girl. We're doing it for all of us, but we're doing it for her. In 10 years, when the Sustainable Development Goals, which is kind of a lot of the frame where gender equality is both a separate goal, number 5, but it is also a cross-cutting. You can't talk about education without talking about gender. You can't talk about economic growth without talking about gender. You can't talk about the environment and climate change without talking about the women who are on the front line and living it here and now.
Yeah.
So we really have a great opportunity. We cannot waste it. So when I ask for bold action, I say go beyond what you've said, do it, and do it long-term.
Mm.
So the action coalitions that we're gonna see being established, that'll go for the next 10 years. We want that 15-year-old girl be able to live all the goals, be able to live her full potential in 10 years, and we can do it.
And when you say action, what are you looking for people to do? When I say people, I mean individuals or governments. You know, what aspects of either laws do you want to change or some other elements of society?
So I have a power tool. This is the gender lens. So I have this.
So we're looking at a magnifying glass,
and I want everybody. We want everybody, whether as individuals, to look at our own lives, both at the biases we have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how do we bring up our boys? How do we bring out our girls? What do we tell them? What do we teach them? What opportunities do we give them? Are they equal? Are they fair? But also, how are we in the workplace? What are we doing? And that's systemic and individual, economic and political. So if we look at the political system, we want to ditch the discriminatory laws that's still on the books. We want to push the progressive ones, and there we in the G7, we've found the 80 inspirational laws that governments can look to. But we also want the investments in women's organizations and in this whole implementation. And finally, measure what you treasure. If you don't measure this, and that's at company level, whether we are talking about women in leadership that you work so much and so wonderfully with, but if we do not kind of measure it, invest in it, tie bonuses and all of that to that, we're not going to show we're serious about it, and we're not going to see the results.
So what can companies do around the world to also take very specific action?
Very concretely, use the gender lens and make a gender analysis of your business. And that's not just if you're a big company like JP Morgan. That's also the small and the medium and all the ones who haven't cared about this yet. You know, a gender analysis, it doesn't have to be difficult. There's the Global Compact that has good principles on what to
So there's stuff
follow.
Out there
there's
you can use.
Stuff out there. Do the bias identification and bias training that can really kind of hone in where you're actually going wrong. And then kind of look at the very concrete elements. Equal pay, leadership, work environment, anti-harassment. It's very concrete.
Right.
What we have done in Women Deliver, we have a big campaign, started 3 years ago. It's called Deliver for Good, Deliver for Girls and Women. And that has now gathered more than 500 civil society organizations from across the globe, from across all sectors, you know, kind of from water, from money, from education, from health. And everybody takes their logos and their egos off and focus on her. Now we've created a business ally network where we have companies who want to not only do the right thing, but also showcase how they do it and help others do it. So that business ally network, and then get involved in the generation equality, because this takes everybody.
Do you use that information on the companies and what people are doing to share best practices and help educate others who are interested but haven't just gotten there yet?
Yeah.
What's effective? You know, what do you see out there that you think more companies should be adopting?
If we talk about equal pay, for example, transparency is a very powerful tool.
Yes.
So the equal pay audits, because many companies say, and I've been in some discussions here, that say, oh, we have in the same job, people get the same salary. That's not equal pay. That's equal pay in that job. But if you only have women in the so-called women's job and lower bracket jobs, of course you don't have pay equity.
Right.
You also have to look at the different levels. So you have to have that transparency, and you have to dare that as a company. As somebody said yesterday, we know who to go for if we don't reach the economic goals. We know who to go for and go and strangle if our customers are not happy. But we never go for the ones who kind of don't fill the goals in regard to gender.
So we talk about making the gender and inclusion agenda work for all. So work for all classes of society too. And you've talked about democratizing feminism. So it's not just there for affluent women. How should these efforts really think about that, the class piece of that, to make sure it's working for everybody?
Yeah, this is everybody's business, and it cannot be business as usual. And, you know, I'll step right out there. You know, I am a Scandinavian, white, blue-eyed woman with a good education. I have a home. I have friends. You know, I'm very, very privileged. And acknowledging that privilege is the first step of really doing something about it. So this is not a numbers game. It is not just about getting women into the C-suite or the CEO position or the board. It's also about who do we bring with us in terms of different people, in terms of age, sexuality, income, geographical background, educational background, who do we bring with, and how are we going to use that power we get or that we have? It's not about having it.
Right.
It's about using it for the right thing. So we need to look at age. We need to look at yes, gender. We need to look at ethnicity. We need to look at educational background. We need to look at geographies. And it's our responsibility to bring people with us. I'm so happy that some of the women deliver young leaders. So we have a digital university where we train young advocates from across the world, now 120. You know, one of them, an amazing young woman called Natasha, she's actually in the big house here. She's in the Congress and she addressed all the leaders. She's 18 years old, she's from Zambia,
wow.
And she's telling the world leaders what they need to do. And they should listen. She's not only the future, she's very much today. Mm. And that's the thing about the young leaders.
So you've said that the biggest challenge to the women's empowerment movement today is the need to involve more men. How can we do that? And tell me about some of the good guys that you've been speaking with.
Oh, there's great guys. And there's also one of the good things about being here in Davos. You speak to a lot of the good guys. You speak to some of those who don't know yet, but, you know, I believe in enlightening. So gender equality is not a woman's problem, as I said. It is a win, win, win. And again, getting the evidence on that, and there's some tremendous both researchers and doers who do that, whether Gary Barker from Promundo or Michael Kaufman from the White Ribbon Alliance back then, but he's also one of the writers on this. They produce evidence, both on how does paternity leave really change the game?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is a game changer.
That, for the men.
That being home with the kid, both what happens in your brain and your body and your view of the home, it's not suddenly a woman's domain.
Right.
It's our place. So having men involved, not only mentors, we got to go beyond mentoring. It's supporting and advocating for women.
Yes.
But also at home and taking the fair share of that home, the homework.
Mm-hmm.
And it's as role models for both boys and girls.
Yes.
The kids pick up immediately if you say, I'll help mom in the kitchen. You have just defined it as her domain. They also see if you describe one of your leaders as a female leader. Would you ever see a male leader? So it's in the language, it's in how in what we do, it's in what we project. Of course, it's also in what they say,
mm-hmm.
but it's more in what they do. Do you, as a leader, go to your daughter's soccer practice?
Yeah.
Do you, you know, kind of leave and, you know, maybe log on later? Do you show that it's okay?
Yeah.
So working with men, both in delivering the evidence, but also being those role models and supporters and advocates and thinkers and doers, is so key. And men win too. Because let's just be clear, the gender boxes, the gender roles that we have stuffed each other into, that kind of says that the woman has to be caring and beautiful and quiet.
Right.
You know? Men has to be tall and rich and have a good jaw. You know, most of the men I know, they don't live up to that either.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We're both you know, both men and women, and no, there's not only two genders, but they are stuffed into roles that are harmful for both. A man don't cry. It's kind of, why not?
Yeah. Well, thank you. It's been such a pleasure to talk with you and hear about how you're taking this message and advocacy around the world. Thank you. This is so
important. Welcome. You're welcome. You know, yes, it is around the world. As we say in Women Deliver, you know, we change the world, we work hard, and we have some fun with good partners like yourself when we're doing it.
Thank you. Have a great week here. Thanks to Katya Iverson for joining me to discuss her advocacy for gender equality through her work with Women Deliver and other groups. I'm so inspired by her career and life's work. Thank you for joining us today. The mission of Women on the Move is to help women in their professional and personal lives. Our goal is to introduce you to people with great ideas, inspiring stories, and a passion to make a difference. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe so you won't miss any others. Thank you to our partners at the Female Quotient and Magnet Media for helping us tell these stories. For JPMorgan Chase's Women on the Move, I'm Sam Saperstein.